From the Land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 27th day of September 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions. And we'll hear how Illinois Central College, that's ICC near Peoria, is working to create a system approach to nutrient loss from farm fields right there on its campus. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. December corn down a penny at $3.71 and a half. The March at $3.83 and three quarters. One lower May contract down at $3.91. Finished a penny and a quarter lower in July, down one at $3.96 and a half. September corn $3.98 and a quarter for next year, a penny and a quarter lower, and December at $4.03, down one and a quarter. That's the 2020 corn contract. And November soybeans $5.5 lower, $8.83 the settlement price. January $8.97 and a half. Down five and a quarter. March there five lower at 9.10. The May down a nickel. July 4 3/4 lower. And next year's November at 9.40 and 1/2 cent, 3.5 cents lower. The bean oil down 39 cents. The bean meal 90 cents lower. Wheat futures soft red. July contract at 5.02 1/4, 3 3/4 higher. July hard red down a penny and a quarter at $4.39 1/4. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished up the October $2.07 1/2 cents at 105 2 1/2. December also higher, up $1.82 1/2 at $110.57 1/2. And feeder cattle at $144.32 1/2, $1.25 or rather $1.22 1/2 higher on the afternoon. And the nearby lean hogs in the October at $65.27 1/2, up $1.05 for the day. Energy's trading the crude oil about 50 cents lower. Ethanol futures around a 4 cents higher. Heating oil a penny and 3 tenths lower. And gasoline down 1 cent at this hour. Natural gas about 4 cents lower on the day. The Dow 147 pence down. The Dow down around 150 points. The U.S. dollar is up 0.01. And gold futures at $14.96.80, down $11.10. Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz now joins us to take a look at the marketplace for the day. Hey, good afternoon to you. Happy Friday, Mike.
You too, Todd. Happy pre-hogs and pigs report and happy pre-grain stocks report. Fresh USDA data coming at us.
All the time. There's always a new report unless, of course, it's ERS and then it's going to be delayed. Oh, I won't go there. Okay, so let's talk about yeah, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about what happened in the marketplace. But we'll begin with some of the yield numbers we are hearing so far. What have you found?
You know, it's early on, and I think that has to be we have to predicate everything with that. But we are starting to get into the corn and the beans, quite surprisingly, pretty heavily here at the end of the week, especially versus the earlier part of the week. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is the weather that we've had has allowed the moisture levels and the beans especially to really come down quickly. And producers are also now at the end of the week getting pretty nervous about the colder, wetter weather that is in the forecast. And the yields are, I think, matching up with expectations that I've had, the producers have had as far as hand counting. Very good, strong yields in areas of like Morgan County and on west and a little bit farther south towards and into Taylorville, Illinois. But a lot of really tough yields when it comes to north of Champaign County and north of Bloomington, east of Bloomington as well. So bean yields, generally speaking, Todd, there are areas where the 70s and 80s can be found, especially a lot of 70s and 80s. In the early Kentucky and Tennessee bean fields, and there's some in Indiana and Illinois, from what I understand, very few in Indiana, but 50s catches a lot of yields, and I think 200 bushels catches a lot of Nebraska yields, and 175 bushels catch a lot of Indiana and Illinois yields so far. And so you got to wonder why we're not seeing some kind of a price move to the upside in face of this type of yield early yield numbers, and I think it goes right back to the macro pressures that we have reignited thanks to the impeachment inquiry, and the dollar just became a safe haven as soon as that news broke.
Yeah, so the dollar, a safe haven, the USMCA, the Chinese trade deal, all in peril of some sort, I suppose, because of the happenings in Washington, D.C. So we'll have to keep a very close eye on that. There was good news that the Japanese deal was put through, and it looks just like the TPP would have. So we now, relatively speaking, are on a level playing field with other nations that are dealing with Japan. That's helpful. However, we're moving through the harvest season now, very early in the harvest season. Do you suppose that we can close this month out with a final push to the upside? And I guess that would have to do with the grain stocks figures that are released at 11 on Monday.
Yeah, the way I see it, and you brought up some really key points, the U.S.-Japan trade deal really didn't get priced in at all in the grains. It did in the meats. I think that's one of the big reasons why the cattle was able to really find some late week short covering and fresh several week highs. But it should be just as good for grain sorghum as for the United States grain sorghum exports as the beef exports, from my understanding. And you're right, we haven't gotten the U.S.-China trade deal, but we did see pork purchases from China again this week. And we obviously saw lots of bean purchases. So we have kind of a de facto trade agreement at this stage, because China's purchasing beans for two reasons. We're cheaper by almost $30 a ton, and the Chinese are now ramping up in a big way on their hog production. I think you and I talked about that last week, and the market's come to grips with that. And yet we still continue to find real resistance in letting the market go higher. So to answer your question, I think if the USDA does not give us any new bearish feed to feed the bull on the grain stocks report, I would be looking for more upside than downside as we close out September because of some of these fundamentals that we haven't priced in. I have to say I found it very interesting this week as we closed out Friday's session that word came around that Brazil was shipping corn to the United States, I'm guessing into Wilmington bulk because the buyer was reportedly to be Cargill. I really wonder, as we go into the grain stocks report with 2.5 billion bushels of old crop corn and with harvest starting and with drier rates being cut and basis being raised in a lot of areas for corn, why are we bringing corn in when the Brazilian corn is only about $7 or $8 a ton cheaper than the United States corn at the Gulf? So they're taking a loss essentially at that price if they booked it here in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And we're just about ready to get fresh supplies in, and we've got a huge old crop supply, we think. So I really will be interested to see what those grain stocks report numbers say for corn especially, because I just don't see that 2.5 billion bushel crop out there right now.
So you don't see the ending stocks in quite that way. How much lower do you think it is?
I honestly think that we are closer to a 2.1 or even a 2.2 max billion bushel carryover from old crop at this stage of the game. And I think unless it's south of Cincinnati, because I've really been trying hard to figure out and find out through sources where this old crop corn is sitting. And unless it is offshore or out in the Pacific Northwest or south of Cincinnati, no one I've contacted to that would have an idea where it would be is saying they have nearly the supplies that they had last year at this time. And that's essentially what USDA is saying, is we've got the same supplies last year. And many producers I've asked in the last couple weeks have said, I just didn't have the cash flow to be able to sit on that much corn. And so I definitely don't have that much, you know, compared to what USDA's expectations are. So I'm hoping that we get a little bit more clarification on the stocks report about how much we actually have, because I think we fed a lot. And while the exports really did fall pretty rapidly and were worse than my expectations for the end of the 18-19 crop year, I still think that the yield and the feed demand would put us closer to a 2.1 or 2.2 billion bushel carryover.
So you think yield's lower and feed demand is higher both?
Yes, I do, from last year. And I think that's where the early harvesting reports that we're getting and the way the elevators are acting in both parts of the Corn Belt. I mean, I've got Nebraska clients and Illinois clients both telling me that ethanol plants who have just gotten done reducing their crush are bidding up corn right now. And so things just don't add up in the country right now like they normally do going into harvest.
So it should make 11 o'clock Monday pretty darned interesting to see, I would think.
I would hope so. And that's part of the things that we really want to find out, going into the end of the month, along with the weather. I mean, we may not get a freeze in Fargo or Mason City, Iowa, but it does look like a lot of rain's coming and a pattern shift is coming. If that comes around, again, I don't think we priced any of that in this week.
What are you watching on the outside markets as it relates to Washington, D.C. or other places? I know you talked about the dollar up front.
Yeah, I really have felt like that we are close to a U.S.-China trade negotiation, especially with the October anniversary of the Communist Party on October 1. And with these meetings coming up on October 10, I think, again, this is our best shot at getting an agreement. And I think that the fact that we've seen them buy pork, we've seen prices for pork in China escalate to historic levels in a short period of time, and the fact that we did get the U.S.-Japan trade agreement, I would say that we have the best game going right now for getting a good trade agreement with China when it comes to U.S. agriculture. So I'm pretty optimistic going into the end of this week. I just hope I don't live to regret it a week from now.
So you're talking about an interim agreement, a mini agreement just on ag.
Exactly. I don't think we're going to get a national security and trade agreement out of the Chinese at this stage. And I think maybe the president, while he says he wants a complete good agreement all the way through, I think this impeachment inquiry maybe will make him readjust his thinking on this.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you, sir.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, joins us on the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. You can listen to him again on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Find us as a podcast as well. We're in Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, and of course, the NPR One app. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible now joins us to check out the weather forecast. I suppose we should talk about the rain that we're getting today first.
Around midday, we're getting our first round of storms. Then we have a second round coming tonight, and that's going to be on the main front that is going to be pushing through. Now, normally when we're talking about fronts pushing through, we tend to think about temperature changes and whatnot, but this one's really going to stall out near us, which is why not only today and tonight do we have chances for rain, but because that front has a hard time moving much further to the southeast, we're going to see a lot of rain stretching. Honestly, it's a big area. Western Texas through the panhandles, through Kansas, through Missouri, through western Illinois, through parts of eastern Iowa up into Wisconsin. That little corridor in there, also over to Minnesota, is going to get repeated rounds of rainfall through the next few days, such that we may be adding up our rain, measuring it in full inches here rather than tenths of an inch like we've been seeing a lot this summer and early fall. So, yeah, we got some heavy rain coming in the near term. It's a couple rounds of it today, but the pattern is going to hang on at least in the next 4 or 5 days such that we stay on the warmer side of things.
So we're warm, but I know the temperatures have been cold in the northwest. Will they stay that way?
Yeah, so we have a pretty sizable trough digging into the northwest, and that's where the show really gets going because we're expecting in parts of the Rocky Mountains in Montana 50 plus inches of snow in the next couple of days. And that's going to spread not only through parts of Montana, but into the Canadian prairies, several inches of snow through parts of southern Alberta and also southern Saskatchewan. And the reason why we bring this up is because that low pressure system, as it goes moving across the U.S., by midweek next week, it finally gets out of the way. Well, it's going to be keeping the northern part of the U.S. cold while we're warm. We're on the warm sector of that thing, but it's going to keep the northern plains quite cold, such that over the next 10 days, parts of the Dakotas may only pick up another 10 to 30 growing degree units. And by the way, they need about 300 to get all that crop that has just went to dent. They need about 300 GDUs to get it to finish. So this is not good because as that system goes through after the third and the fourth, big high pressure center comes in, calms things down, clears things out, and they may be looking at a frost not only in parts of Montana, but the northern part of North Dakota, getting over into parts of Minnesota, and then it's going to sweep through, the Great Lakes. So this has turned out pretty normal for this time of year for that area, but what's not normal is the fact that so many folks up there planted a crop so very late, even after their insurance dates, because, kind of a forced situation, you get a crop into the ground. So I'm concerned about what's coming behind this system, not only the rain we're going to get out ahead of it.
So that takes us into what, mid-October or so?
Yeah, so the first week of October, when all this stuff clears out, what I'm looking for here is a bit of a pattern change. And the number one thing that I'm watching right now is the Gulf of Alaska. There are some indicators that we could go into what's called a high over low flow pattern. Now, the good part about a high over low pattern this time of year in the Gulf of Alaska is it tends to flatten the jet stream out over the United States. And what I mean by that is that's going to help us, well, stay away from a frost getting down into, you know, southern Minnesota or into Nebraska or Iowa or even Illinois, as long as that pattern stays kind of loose like that. Now, certainly in the near term, it's not. We are highly amplified and we're really, really warm on one side and very cold on the other. But I think by mid-October, we should be seeing a bit of a drier pattern compared to what we've got now, and also a pattern that isn't going to be bringing in major risk for frost, at least from what I can see today.
What do you see in South America?
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of discussion about the South America drought that covered parts of Brazil. They are getting some rain right now, and they're being helped along by a tropical feature called the Madden-Julian Oscillation, stuck in phase one temporarily. And that really helps kind of uncork the atmosphere over Brazil and lets it rain. So they're going to be seeing quite a bit of rainfall in the near term. Most of those folks I talked to down there say they wait until they get about 2 inches, and then they see that the monsoon's not going to slow down, and then they go after it like mad. So a year ago, they were already deep into planting, very quick planting progress last year. This year, they are waiting. They're waiting to see if the monsoon cuts back off in the first couple weeks of October before it comes back on full strength. And therefore, that's going to delay the planting of beans, which is going to impact safrinha corn and cotton more than it's going to impact beans. So we all need to be watching South America very carefully, because unlike a year ago, they are not planting fast early. And that's something they did last year that really set them up for a great year.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agripol joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Pete Fundell has been putting together a system approach to improving water quality coming off of farm fields located on the ICC campus overlooking the Illinois River near Peoria. Can you tell me just a bit about this approach?
Yeah, well, basically, we have about 50 tillable acres here on the ICC campus. And several years ago, we started looking at cover crops just for kind of, you know, purposes of soil health and water quality. And then that kind of eventually snowballed into kind of an expanded program, kind of really focused in on the nutrient loss reduction strategy and water quality, where the first phase was we did a paired field study, two fields side by side with separate independent tile lines. One's farmed conventionally, tillage, corn and soybeans. The other's no-till, corn and soybeans with cover crops every year. And then we analyze all the tile water flowing out of those two fields for nutrient loads and concentration. That's been going for about 5 years. A couple of years later, we added a bioreactor so that all the water after it leaves those two fields then flows through a bioreactor. And again, we have water sampling to tell how good of a job a bioreactor can do at removing nitrates from the tile water. And then the next phase of that project was just here in July. We built a 1-acre wetland on our campus that actually drains almost all of the water off the 50 acres of the agricultural fields. So all the tile water will basically flow through a 1-acre wetland. And again, this spring, then we'll put water monitoring stations on the inlet and the outflow of the wetland, again, to be able to monitor the effectiveness of wetlands at removing nutrients in the tile water.
Yeah, so tell me about the difference between the two farms. You've had that running for 5 years, which is plenty long enough to collect the data to get a good idea.
Correct. I mean, obviously, year in, year out, there's variances depending on weather and rainfall, et cetera. But on average, basically, when you move to a system where you're having cover crops in the field, that's about a 40% reduction in nitrates getting to the tile line. And our data tended to show that happened from the very first year the cover crops were planted. So I think there's a big advantage of having a cover crop in a field and being able to capture all that leftover nitrogen that might be in the field or that's being converted by the microbes in the soil after you're done with harvest, et cetera. Being able to put that nitrogen back into an organic form in a plant rather than it getting to the tile lines.
You also have a wood chip bioreactor in the system that's acting as a filter. Can you tell me how it's been working?
Yes, I mean, definitely the bioreactor does a good job at cleaning up the water that flows through the bioreactor. I'd say one of the limiting factors, though, of a bioreactor is during the peak rain events, or I should say high rain, high flow events, where you get lots of rainfall at a short amount of time, a lot of the water bypasses the reactor because it just can't handle that much water. So in the grand scheme of things, the total amount of water that gets cleaned by the bioreactor is only about 15% roughly of the amount of water that actually flows out of those two fields. But that 15% is very effectively cleaned. But again, it's a small fraction of the total load of the water coming out of the field just because of the high flow events.
This wood chip bioreactor is the second filter in the system beyond the cover crops on one of the fields.
Correct.
And then there is a third element. You're in the midst of putting together a constructed wetland.
Exactly. That's why, it's kind of unique that we have them all in the same system so we can kind of analyze the different loadings at different stages. The point of the wetland is obviously it's at the very end of the 12-inch tile that drains pretty much the entire 50 acres. So we're hoping to be able to obviously capture all the nutrients coming out of the tile water, see what the wetland can do with that. The wetland was designed by the Wetlands Initiative, and after they designed it, the designs went through the NRCS to make sure they were approved by their practices as well. So it's sized accordingly where it should be able to filter out most of the nutrient load coming off the 50 acres. It is a little bit different than the typical wetland you might see out in a farmer's field or in a farmer's, because it's on a main road here on our campus. So it was kind of aesthetically designed. So it's not just really a rectangle. It's kind of a flowing, meandering, kind of a big horseshoe-shaped wetland. So it has some aesthetic value to it. It's got some deeper pockets and some islands in it. So it's kind of, again, it's designed to look nice, but also effectively, hopefully, clean all the tile water as well.
How do you incorporate this into the agricultural curriculum there at ICC?
Oh, absolutely. We incorporate all the different trials we do on the tillable acres and the wetland projects. It all gets incorporated into many of the different ag classes we do, from soils to soil fertility to, just a host of the different courses. We try to get the students involved in looking at the research data and understanding why we do certain practices and their effects on the environment and all that kind of stuff. We incorporate that very much into the coursework.
If people want to see this, they can just drop by the ICC campus there at the top of the bluff near Peoria?
Correct. Yeah, the wetland's very much on one of the main drags that you can see it as you drive by. Right now, it actually is just planted to grass and oats because the wetland plants wouldn't have survived the winter if we'd have planted them yet. So right now, it's just a temporary planting. Next spring, late spring, early summer, we'll plant all the wetland plants into it, and then we'll divert all the water from the main to go through the wetland. So this year you won't, the rest of this year you won't see much yet. Next year is where you should be there to see the really big change and kind of the progression of the wetland plants growing in the over the next couple of years after that.
Am I right that the cover crops seem to be the most effective tool for you to use to control nutrient loss?
Oh, definitely. The wetland, as far as effect on your soil, effect on water quality, cover crops, I think, are the easiest and probably least expensive of any of the practices you can do and seem to have one of the bigger effects on the nutrient loading on the tiles. So, yeah, I think it's a great practice to, and we've got lots of data on cover crops for different reasons, different plots. We've been doing that for many more years, even than the kind of the water quality work.
Pete Fondell is with Illinois Central College. You can drop by the ICC campus near Peoria if you'd like to see the constructed wetland. In fact, Fondell says the wood chip bioreactor is also open, meaning they've left the top of it uncovered. Normally, those are closed systems, so you can see the wood chips and how they degrade over time and what the construction looks like right there at Illinois Central College. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, the Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Or you can look us up and listen to us as a podcast in almost all of your favorite podcast apps, including Stitcher, SoundCloud, the NPR One app, in iTunes, in the Google Play Store, even on Spotify. Check us out. And if you go to our website, you'll find our whole day's worth of programming, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between each and every business day of the year.